بسم الله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله ومن ولا وبعد. Just quickly, couple of comments before we begin the class today. Those of you who were with us for book number one, meaning earlier today after Dhuhr, then I may repeat some of what I said then for the benefit of those who are coming with us now. Just want to remind everybody, number one, first and foremost, that we are in the days of the first 10 days of Dhul Hijjah. And we know that the Prophet ﷺ encouraged and strongly urged that a person occupy themselves in these days with doing of good deeds. There are no days in which good deeds are done that are more beloved to Allah than the good deeds done in these 10 days. Today is the 4th of Dhul Hijjah. And Thursday, inshallah, this coming Thursday, is the 8th of Dhul Hijjah, the first day of the Hajj. The people who have gone for Hajj, they will be going to Mina on the 8th of Dhul Hijjah. That is this Thursday. And on Friday, they will be going to Arafat. Friday is the day of Arafat, the 9th of Dhul Hijjah. And those who are not fortunate enough to be in Hajj, inshallah, are fortunate if they fast on the day of Arafat. But since Arafat is on Yom Jumu'ah, we should not fast on Jumu'ah alone. It's not permissible to single out Jumu'ah for fasting, unless it's obligatory fast in Ramadan or like this. Otherwise, you should fast the day before. So it's not permissible to single out Jumu'ah, fasting alone. It's not permissible. Prophet ﷺ said, do not single out Jumu'ah for fasting. So if you intend to fast on Yom Arafah, and everyone who's able to fast should be intending to fast, you should also fast on Yom Khamis, on Thursday. Join Thursday to Friday, inshallah. And Saturday, October 4th, this coming Saturday, October 4th, is Yom Al-Eid, Eid al-Adha. Inshallah, if you have intended to sacrifice, do not, if you have intended to sacrifice for your family, for your household, do not cut your nails, do not shave hairs from your body. It's not permissible for a person who intends to make a sacrifice until they perform their sacrifice on the day of Eid. Don't clip your nails, fingernails, toenails, or any hairs from your body. That is the head of the house. As far as the rest of the family members, it's not applicable to them. So in these days, inshallah, please, let's try to fast as much as we can, give charity, read Quran, make dhikr, dua, stand in the night in prayer, whatever we can do of good deeds, being kind to people, helping people, being merciful, pardoning and forgiving, all of that, inshallah, is more beloved to Allah in these days than any other days in the whole year. The hadith is in Bukhari, and Abu Dawud, and others. After that, we always like to begin any class with the reminding ourselves, each of us, reminding ourselves the importance of intention. Whatever we do for the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, it's incumbent that we make sure that our intention is purely for the sake of Allah alone. Whether we make a salat, or giving charity, or making hajj, or fasting, or whatever we're doing of good, seeking knowledge, learning, whatever it is, we should always make sure that it's for the sake of Allah. إِنَّمَا الْعَمَالُ بِالنِّيَاتِ وَإِنَّمَا لِكُلِّ امْرِئٍ مَا نَوَى. That actions are judged by intentions, and only by intentions. And every person will have that which they intended. To the end of the hadith, as reported by Al-Bukhari and Muslim. The Prophet ﷺ reminded us in this hadith that the most critical factor, the central matter that determines the correctness of a person's action, if it is valid or invalid, and the greatness of its reward, if it will be a greater reward or lesser reward, is depending on what? The purity of intention. The purity of intention will either determine that the deed is valid or invalid. It's accepted by Allah, rejected. Its reward is increased by ikhlas, sincerity of intention, or is decreased by the absence of it or the pollution of the intention. And Allah doesn't accept any deed except that it's done for Him alone. So if this, inshallah, is a deed that we're doing for the sake of Allah, that we're coming here and spending these 2 hours once a week in order to learn Arabic, in order to read the Quran, in order to study the deen, in order to be able to worship Allah better and get nearer to Him, if it's for the sake of Allah, then we have to make sure that that's our intention from the beginning, and then we have to remind ourselves and maintain it throughout, until the end. And then after it's finished, and He keep the intention pure by not spoiling it, by bragging about it or boasting about it or telling other people that I have done this and I have done that. After that, I want to mention a few points. I already mentioned them to the earlier class. Those of you who are here, inshallah, will just be a reminder. Those of you who are not here, then, I have made the commitment to be here, inshallah, as long as I am able. At this day and this time, inshallah, I will be here, bi-idhnillahi ta'ala. No matter, even if I'm sick, I will be here, inshallah, as long as I'm able to get here. It doesn't stop me. I expect you to do the same thing. I want it to be mutual. As long as I have to come, you also have to come. I don't want to come here by myself. I can do this at home if I just want to do it by myself. I don't need to come all the way over here. I don't live around the corner from here. And I can't walk this far. So I get somebody to bring me here. I expect you to get somebody to bring you here. Or however you can get here. Maybe you can walk. I don't know. But this is a commitment that I'm making. Inshallah, I have to be reciprocal. I expect you to make the same commitments. That you attend regularly and that you be on time. The class, the time of the class, the maw'id, the appointment for the class is connected to the salat. The time for the class is Salatul Asr. That means you have to be here for Salatul Asr. Pray in jama'ah. And the class begins after the salat. Okay, so please don't come to the class and you didn't come for the salat. And try not to come for the salat late and pray by yourself. When you could have come a few minutes earlier and prayed in the jama'ah. And the reward for praying in jama'ah is 25 or 27 times more than the reward of praying alone. So, I mean, if you're going to come here, you might as well come and catch the salat in jama'ah and get that reward. Inshallah. So we expect everyone to be regular in attendance and on time. And we also hope that everybody will be active in participating in the class. That means that we expect you to read, we expect you to write, we expect you to speak, we expect you to ask questions, we expect you to answer questions. Everybody should participate to the best of your ability. Everybody's not going to be equal. Some people are going to be a little ahead of others, understand a little more quickly than others, but everybody needs to participate. Everybody should be reading when we read. Everybody should be writing when there's something to write. When I ask questions, everybody should be ready to try to answer if you know the answer. And when I say, do you have any questions, everybody should be asking questions. There must be something that you don't understand. Ask. Ask, inshallah. Participate. And that participation doesn't stop when we leave the class after these 2 hours. Rather, participation goes on while you leave the class. On the next day, and the following day, and the third day, and the fourth day, and the sixth day, and the seventh day, 7 days a week. When you're not in class, you should be participating wherever you are, at home, at work, in the masjid, wherever you may be, inshallah. Reading, writing, reviewing. And most importantly, in this class, inshallah, we're going to focus on reading and writing. It's incumbent upon you to complete your understanding of the Arabic language that you listen to the audio files. That you listen to them so that you train your ear to understand the spoken language. And that you try as much as you can to practice with other brothers or sisters. Sisters practice with the sisters and the brothers practice with the brothers. And a man and a woman can practice with their spouse. With their children, and so on. Practice speaking, listening, so that not only you can recognize what you see, but also you can recognize what you hear. Some of us, we look at the book, we can read it, and we know what it means. But when we hear it, we don't have a clue what they're talking about. Somebody starts speaking, we don't know what they're saying, because we haven't trained our ear. So we have audio files, alhamdulillah, just open it up and listen. Lesson by lesson, try to listen to it. Once, twice, three times. If you listen to it every day, it's no harm. The commitment that we're asking is like we always do. For those of you who know, we're asking that you study outside of the classroom 7 days a week. Right? That means every single day. At least half hour every day. At least half hour every day. So that entails what? Either you sit, specify a certain time during the day, morning, noon, or night, that's good for you. You're not tired at that time. Not at the end of the day, you're dead tired, you just finished working in the dunya, now you go home tired, ready to go to sleep, and that's when you're going to study. No, that's not the time to study. It can't be when you're tired. It can't be when you're busy for something else. It can't be when you're occupied, when you're distracted. You know, at this time of day, all the children up and they're distracting you, you can't function at that time. That's the time you're going to study? That's not the time for studying. You have to pick a time that's going to be beneficial. That 1 half hour, every single day. If you can't get a half an hour in, then make it 15 minutes in the morning and 15 minutes in the evening. Or 10 minutes and 10 minutes and 10 minutes. Go to the masjid for dhuhr a little early and spend 10 minutes. Go to asr a little early and spend 10 minutes. Go to isha a little early and spend 10 minutes. But try to get that time in every single day, 7 days a week, inshallah. And it's going to be necessary because there's a lot of work that we're going to cover, and if you don't do it every day, you're not going to be able to keep up. And once you start dropping behind, you're going to get frustrated. When you get frustrated, you're going to drop out. We're not going to see you here anymore. They're going to be looking for you. What happened to brother so-and-so? He wasn't doing his work regularly, he fell behind, he got frustrated, he dropped out. Same thing with the sisters. Don't be a dropout. Finish high school. This is high school now. We was in elementary school, now we went to high school, book two, huh? Don't be a high school dropout. Do this, inshallah, you can do it. Okay, after that, I ask you to help one another. We only have these 2 hours, one day a week, help one another. Help another brother or another sister. Meaning visit them, call them, spend some time together, wherever it may be, and help each other with the lessons, with the exercises, with the questions, with the issues, whatever you're learning. Help somebody, or get some help from somebody. Cooperate with one another. As Allah said in the Quran, وَتَعَاوَنُوا عَلَى الْبِرِّ وَالتَّقْوَى وَلَا تَعَاوَنُوا عَلَى الْإِثْمِ وَالْعُدْوَانِ. This is a command from Allah. تَعَاوَنُوا عَلَى الْبِرِّ وَالتَّقْوَى. Cooperate with one another in righteousness and piety. And do not cooperate with one another in sin and transgression. So help each other, inshallah, in any way that you can, so that nobody drops out. If we see somebody having difficulty, some of us have to step up and extend ourselves and offer help to that person. Say, I'll meet you later on, I'll meet you tomorrow, I'll meet you at the masjid, I'll meet you somewhere, or give me a call or something. Help each other, inshallah. Okay, after that, two major matters, and then we'll start with the class, inshallah. All of you who have been here before, you already know that the Arabic language has two main foundations, and this is what this book focuses upon, this is what we will be struggling with. And that is to memorize the vocabulary and to learn and understand the grammatical rules, the principles, the qawaid of the language. You have to memorize the vocabulary, you have to learn the grammatical rules. You have to have both of them, otherwise you will not understand the language, you will not grasp it. Understanding the grammatical rules is not that difficult. We will go over them once, two, three times. Okay, in the summary in the beginning of the class, we'll go over it. When we read the key, we'll go over it. When we're doing the exercise, we'll be going over them. When we're reading the text, we'll be going over the rules. Okay, so we're going to be constantly going over the rules. Just a matter of understanding it, and then to retain it, you have to apply it. You have to practice it. You have to implement those rules. That means you have to do the exercises, orally, spoken, yani in writing, you know, listening. You have to take these rules and put life into them. Don't make them just principles like theory, but actually apply them in your use of the language, whether you're reading or writing or listening. Apply the rules. When you hear somebody speaking, listen to them and see if they're applying the rules. You hear a person say, وَضَعْتُ الْكِتَابِ عَلَى الْمَكْتَبُ. What's wrong with that sentence? وَضَعْتُ الْكِتَابِ عَلَى الْمَكْتَبُ. What's wrong with that sentence? وَضَعْتُ الْكِتَابِ. What's wrong with that? I put the book. Al-kitab is the object of the verb. Should it be wada'atu al-kitabi or wada'atu al-kitab? Al-kitab wa? Ba. The object of the verb is mansub. Alamatu nasbihi fatha. Wada'atu al-kitabi? No, wada'atu kitaba. Ala al-maktabu. What's wrong with that? Majroor. Jar wa majroor. Has to be kasra. Ala al-kitabi. Okay, the point I'm saying is, when you hear somebody speaking, you may hear them saying things that's wrong. So you, being a student of Arabic language, you should be paying attention to that. You be paying attention to that and noticing those things so that you don't make the same mistakes. Inshallah, as we go through the book, it'll become more clear. But the point I'm saying is that not only when you're writing something, but even when somebody else, when you're reading something or somebody else is speaking, you should be paying attention to how they're using the language and making sure that you are yani applying your rules that you learned so that you grasp them fully and you comprehend them completely and that you're able to use them in your speaking, in your listening, in your writing, in your reading. These are the grammatical rules. As far as the vocabulary, it's just a matter of memorizing. That's the easiest part. All you gotta do is memorize some words. Okay? There are a lot of vocabulary words in this book, but they are manageable. Most of the time, you know, each lesson has 10, 15 words at the most. So if you learn 2 words every day, you'll be good. Sometimes it's less than that. Maybe 1 word every day. If you learn a word every day, from now until we finish this course, inshallah, you'll be good. You'll be good. At the end of the month, you have 30 words. In 4 months, you have how many? 120 words. In a few months, you'll be overwhelmed with vocabulary. You have a lot of stuff. But that's if you learn a word every day. But if you don't learn them day by day, what will happen is that after a few lessons, 10 words will become 20, and 20 will become 30, and 30 will become 40, and then you say, it's too much, I can't learn all these words. But right now it's possible, but then it may be impossible. Okay, so I'm saying, every single day, you should try to learn, half an hour you're going to study the lesson, and every day just take 2 words. Add to it the next day, 2 more words. Add to the next day, 2 more words. If you can learn more than 2, that's even better. If you learn only 1, at least you learn something. But don't go a day, you don't even learn 1 word. Is it possible that from the time you get up for Fajr until you pray Isha, in the whole course of a day you couldn't learn 1 word? That's impossible. That just means you're not trying. So if a day goes by and you don't learn 1 word, لا تلوم إلا نفسك. Don't blame nobody but yourself. Don't blame nobody but yourself. That's just كسالة, كسلان. It's just laziness. That's just being lazy. Okay, so you must memorize the words. Write them down on paper, card, anything. Just add to them every day a few more. Review the ones you learned yesterday and learn 2 or 3 more today. The class format is the same class format that we normally have. That is in the beginning of the class. We're going to review the previous lesson. Okay, we're going to start with review the previous lesson. Today we don't have anything to review for the most part, but you know, whatever we study in today, next week the thing we'll start with is reviewing the lesson, whatever we learned in the previous lesson, and your questions. Whatever questions you have about the previous lesson, the exercises that you did at home, you have some problem, you have some questions, something's not clear, inshallah, in the beginning of the class we start with that. After we do that, then we're going to do the key, the English key. The English key in the back of the book explains the grammatical rules, and it gives you the meaning of the vocabulary words. And it also gives you the translation of what is required in each exercise. What do you have to do for each exercise? You go back to the key, that's what we're going to start with. After we review, we're going to go over the grammatical points, we're going to go over the vocabulary, and then after we do that, we're going to go and read the text of the book, the dialogue, in the Arabic text of the book. Okay, after we go from the English key, we're going to go to the Arabic text, the dialogue, and at that point, we should have some idea of the grammatical points in this lesson. We should have grasped some of the principles, even if we didn't fully comprehend them, we at least have an idea about them. We went over the vocabulary, so we have an idea of the vocabulary. In fact, what I asked you to do when I sent out the emails is to please start learning the vocabulary and reading the book so that you're familiar with it when we come to class today. Okay, and that's what you should always do. Before class, always go over the lesson before you come to class so that you have some familiarity with what we're going to be doing in the class. While we're reading the Arabic text, we're going to be going over the grammatical points. If you don't understand a certain grammatical point while we're going through the text, I'll be asking questions. If you don't understand something, ask about it. Okay, we're going to go over it. And then after the text, we're going to do the exercises. And the exercise, the purpose of the exercise is to implement, to practically apply the grammatical rules that we just got finished studying. Okay, the purpose of the exercise is for you to have a chance to apply the rules that we're learning and to utilize the vocabulary that we're learning. So after we read the dialogue and we see the grammatical points and we see the vocabulary that's in there, now we're going to do exercises where we're going to apply those grammatical rules. So you have a chance to practice them and make sure that you actually understand them. So this is going to be our process. Review, then the English key, we're going to read it, try to explain whatever you need to understand, go over the vocabulary, then we're going to read the dialogue, the Arabic text of the book. And while we're reading the Arabic dialogue, I'm going to be asking questions about vocabulary words, about grammatical rules, about things that we studied in the past and so on. I'm going to be asking questions. And you also can ask questions. If you get stuck on something, you can ask, inshallah. After that, we're going to do the exercises orally in the class. We're going to do the exercises orally. But when you go home, you have to write them out. Okay, you must write them out. It's not enough just to go through the exercises orally, but you have to write. Because if you don't write, you're not going to be able to write. And one of the things that we may be doing when we have time is we're going to do imla. And if you haven't been practicing imla, then you're going to have difficulty. So we're going to start trying to do it, you know, from now and then, maybe not every class. We're going to do a little imla from the text of what we had or from what we had previously. And imla means that I'm going to read something to you, or I'm going to recite something to you, and you're going to listen to what you hear and try to write it. You're going to try to recognize what I'm saying and try to be able to write it, okay, without seeing anything. You're just going to go from what you know, okay? What I'm going to be saying to you are words that you already know, or sentences that you're already familiar with. And then you're going to try to write it down. Dictation is very important because it trains your ear, walaikum salam, trains your ear to comprehend the Arabic spoken language, and it trains you to be able to write what you hear. And that's important. If you hear somebody something and you know that you may forget it, you want to write it down, right? But what if you're not used to writing? You're not going to be able to write it down. So you have to train yourself to write. If you go to a lecture and the sheikh says something important, you might mention a hadith you never heard before, and you want to write that down. So you can write. If you know how to write, mashallah, you hear the sheikh say something in Arabic, you hear what he say, you write it down. You got it. And when you go back home, you want to tell somebody about it, you want to tell your wife, look, I heard this hadith, or you want to tell your brother, or you want to call somebody, you say, I heard this hadith, and you're not going to lie on the Prophet and say something wrong, because you forgot what the sheikh said, and you make up something. But you're going to read it exactly the way the sheikh said it. You wrote it, and now you're going to read it to somebody correctly. Bi'idhnillahi ta'ala. So inshallah, we're going to try to do a little dictation. We're going to also try to work with the dictionary, start practicing how to use the dictionary. And in the first class, in between the first class and this class, yani, we have some time at the end of the first class before Asr. In that class, we're going to be trying to go over reviewing the rules of Tajweed that we were previously studying and practicing some of the surahs of the Quran. Lastly, this is what I expect of you. Inshallah, I need to hear from you if there's something you expect from me. What do you expect from this class? What do you anticipate? What are the things that you would like to see? If we can, we're going to try to accommodate you. So let me hear from you. Or if you have any questions or any comments, take a couple of minutes right now. Now. Tayyib, inshallah. Some of the brothers, inshallah, will call you more often now, inshallah. Whoever wants to call this young man here, get his number before we leave today, inshallah. And inshallah, I promise to make some effort to borrow my son's telephone and call you sometimes, inshallah, if he doesn't mind. If I don't call you, you can blame it on him. Tayyib. And by the way, just in case anybody misunderstands what I said, I don't have a telephone because I don't want one. I don't like to call. Now, dictation, can we do it? Inshallah, we'll try to do it. We'll try to do it. Somebody remind me. Inshallah, we'll try to make some time at the end of the class to do some dictation, inshallah. Or in the middle of the class, or somewhere, inshallah. But somebody remind us, something that we want to do. We want to do it. Okay, that's why I'm mentioning it. We want to do it. It's very important. It's very beneficial. Okay, but it does take some time. And depending on the amount of time that we have, the amount of exercises used that we have in a lesson is going to take up more time than we have. So that's really the problem. We only have a class once a week. If we had class twice a week or three times a week, we could do a lot more things that would benefit greatly. But this is what we have right now. Fayyib? So somebody remind me about dictation. We're going to try to do some dictation. Abdul Halim, go ahead. As far as continuing the class, Allahu A'lam, yani, we will see. I think they're saying, can we have more conversation? I'm not sure what they mean by conversation. Mean conversational Arabic, maybe? Huh? Oral exercises? Okay, inshallah, we'll get some clarification, but if they mean the conversation in Arabic, inshallah, oral exercises, we'll try to do as much as we can. Now, basically the exercises that we do, some of them are writing exercises, but most of it is oral, anyway. But yeah, of course, there's a need for more. Like I said, this class is really focusing on reading and writing. It's really focusing on reading and writing. That's what it really is. Of course, some people may want conversation, and it's just the nature of the situation that we have here, in that we have a limited amount of time, only one class per week, and we have a lot of material to cover. If we added conversation, it would just take more time, which means that we'll go slower, which means that we may never finish the book. So it's difficult. This is what I have chosen to do. This is what the best that I can offer at this moment. We'll do as much oral exercises as possible. Again, there's audio files for you to listen to, and you can practice, like I said, with one another. at home, at the masjid, on the telephone, whatever, you know, practice, inshallah, as much as you can. It's just that the time that we need for conversational exercises is the amount of time that we have. We'll just be doing that. Like one week we'll do grammar and next week we'll do conversation. We'll finish the book in 2020, inshallah. Naam, some hadith, maybe sometimes we might be able to take some hadith and analyze them grammatically, you know, the meanings and stuff like that. It's possible, inshallah. That's definitely something that's possible to do. Actually, that's a part of the course, but again, that's like this actual Medina Arabic course consists of many components. This is one component. It's the central foundation component of the course. The other parts of the course are, what are you talking about? Studying hadith, studying fiqh, studying aqidah. All of that is part of the course. There's the Aqidah section, there's Hadith section, there's Fiqh section, there's Tafsir section, there's Islamic Seerah. All of that is part of the course. There are books for each one of these things. But, I mean, where's the time? When will we do it? I mean, that's because that class is 5 days a week, 5 hours a day. We have 1 day a week, 2 hours. What are we going to do? What can we do with that little bit of time, huh? 5 hours a day, 5 days a week. This course is 5 hours a day. You go there in the morning, you stay until midday. 5 days a week. Then you get homework equal to that. Like if you get 5 hours of class, you get 5 hours of homework too. Okay? We have 2 hours of class and we have 2 hours of homework. But even those 2 hours, difficult for us to do. Not because we're not capable, but sometimes we're overcome by what? Laziness. 1 half hour per day. Okay? So, the 5 hours a day that you have in the Medina course, we're asking you to translate it into 1/2 hour a day when you're out of the class. That's all. I don't think that's asking too much. We're not asking you to do 5 hours a day. We're asking for 1/2 hour. Believe me, and Allah only knows the future. But if each one of us spends 1/2 hour a day seriously trying to study this material, lesson by lesson, you will find at the end of 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, you will find a tremendous improvement in your understanding of the Arabic language. That's almost like something we can almost guarantee, that you cannot go wrong. The more time you put into it, sincere studying, serious studying, not just joking, playing around, but focusing, concentrating, really going at it, giving it a 1/2 hour of your heart. Huh? With full concentration and devotion, with no distractions and no other stuff. Just giving this 1/2 hour. That's all, 1 half an hour. Guarantee, after 1 month, 2 months, you're going to see the difference. But who is going to do it? 7 days a week, 1/2 hour a day. Who is going to do it? It only takes 15 minutes in the morning, 15 minutes at night. Or 10 minutes in the morning, 10 minutes in the midday, and 10 minutes in the evening. That's all it takes. But who's going to actually do it? Huh? Allahumma la sahla illa ma jaltuhu sahla. Allahumma, this supplication we should say from the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. It's appropriate that we say it. Learn it, please. It's in the fortress of the Muslim. Allahumma la sahla illa ma ja'altahu sahla. Allahumma la sahla illa ma ja'altahu sahla. Wa anta taj'alul hazna idha shitta sahla. Oh Allah, there's nothing easy except what you have made easy. Except what you have made easy. That means that if Allah didn't make it easy, everything else is difficult. So it's a lot of difficult stuff. Because there's nothing easy except what Allah made easy. And Allah didn't make everything easy. Allahumma la sahla. There's absolutely nothing easy. Illa ma ja'altahu sahla. Except what you made easy. Wa anta taj'alul hazna idha shitta sahla. And you make that which is difficult easy. If you will. If you will. Allah, He makes that which is difficult easy if He wills. All you gotta do is ask Allah, Allahumma sahli hadha. Make this easy for me, O Allah. Make this easy for me. And Allah, inshallah, He can make it easy for you. He can make it easy for you. Naam. Excuse me? Oh, how can a person gauge that they should be in this class? Well, if anybody has a basic foundation in Arabic language, but they didn't take book one, they never studied it before, and maybe they know some of the material in there and some of it they don't know. Well, after one or two lessons, after maybe two or three lessons, it will become clear. that this is too difficult. I don't know what's going on, I don't understand anything, and I can't grasp it. I'm not learning it, I'm not picking it up, it's too hard. That means that the foundation that they have is not sufficient to do this material. But generally, if a person has studied Arabic before from somewhere, and they have some basic, you know, fundamentals of Arabic vocabulary, grammar, and stuff like that, even if they missed some of the stuff in this book, it's possible. As for me, my own experience is that when I went to Medina, I never studied book one in Medina. But I was familiar with some of the material in there, and I studied Arabic from many books. And when I went to the Arabic program, they put me in level two, in book two, this book. So when I went to Medina, I studied book two in Medina. I never studied book one in Medina. But most of the material in book one I knew. Some of it I didn't know. But you pick it up as you go along. As long as you can grasp the new material that's coming, whatever you missed, inshallah, you'll get it. Because sometimes it will come up again. Because every lesson is built upon what was studied before. So if a person didn't get something, they're going to ask the question, but I don't understand that. If that's something they missed, then the teacher explains it. And then inshallah, they grasp it. But if you don't know anything that's, like you missed most of the stuff, the overwhelming majority of it, then maybe it might be too much for a person to catch up with. It depends. Every person may be different. We don't know where the person is at. So after the first lesson, second lesson, third lesson, inshallah it will become clear that this is overwhelming, it's too much. Or they can do it. Whatever they miss, they'll catch, inshallah. Whatever they miss, they'll catch. As long as they're able to grasp the material that we've taken now. And to grasp it, it only requires that a person listen carefully, concentrate in the class, preview the lesson before you come to class so you're familiar with it, and then do the homework. Every single day do some work, some reading, some writing, some listening. Practicing, inshallah, it's not that difficult. I mean, book two is not that difficult. Book three is a little more difficult now. But book two is manageable, inshallah. So we'll see. In this lesson today, anybody else have any other question or anything before we go on with the lesson for today? Any question? Any comments? Suggestion? Okay, let's look at the key then. Let's start with the key. The key is in the back of the book, right? The English key. Should be page one in the English part of the book. In the back of the book, in the English part of the book. English part of the book. In this key, there are six grammatical points that we're going to study in this lesson. And there are 16 vocabulary words. And in this lesson, there are 13 exercises. We're not going to do all those exercises today. So we're going to start this lesson today. And inshallah, next week, we're going to finish this lesson. Inshallah, bi'idhni Allah ta'ala. There are 13 exercises. But before we get to the exercises, the first we want to go over the English key, which contains, as I said, 6 points, grammatical points, and 16 vocabulary words. So these 16 vocabulary words, if you learn 2 words a day, you will have 14 by next class. So pretty much you're okay. If you learn 2 words a day, you'll be good with the vocabulary. And perhaps even some of the vocabulary in this lesson you already know. Okay, you already know, because maybe you learned it somewhere else or somewhere along the line. You know some of the words already. But if you don't know any words whatsoever in this lesson, learn 2 words every day, inshallah, when you come back to class next week, you'll be good. If you learn 1 every day, at least you have half of them, so that you have a start. You'll be okay. Next week, we're going to finish the lesson, so you can finish learning the vocabulary words next week. But next week, we're going to take a new lesson too, and so, you know, we're going to get new vocabulary words. So don't get behind, inshallah. Be ahead, inshallah. Try to stay ahead. Try to take 2 or 3 words a day, and you'll be all right. Tayyib, let's look at the English key. Everybody has the English key? English key, right? Okay, first thing, in this lesson we learn the following. Number one. And this is the most important point of this lesson. This first grammatical point. Out of the 6 points, 3 of them are principal elements that you must understand well. And 3 of them are minor points that's easy for you to learn. 3 of them are very easy. By the way, in fact, what I should do right now is... let me just say, before I read the English key, the primary point of this lesson that we're going to deal with in this lesson is what is called harf inna. Inna. Okay? And then also we're going to take la'alla. And then we're going to take the use of m, which means or, as opposed to au, which also means or. And then we have though, this word, which means one who possess something, the possessor of something. And we have, what else in this lesson? Oh, we have the numbers, huh? We have the numbers, Mia and Alf. Mia and Alf. Mia is 100 and Alf is 1000. Okay? Though means the possessor, the one who possesses something. Possessor of knowledge, possessor of wealth, possessor of strength, whatever. Possessor of character. This means or. And this also means or. Okay? La'alla and inna. Inna is for ta'keed, certainty. It's harf ta'keed wa nas, certainty. Like you say, definitely, surely, certainly, whatever. And la'alla is, no, huh? Yeah, perhaps. Naam, yes. Perhaps. Something like that, okay? La'alla. La'allaka bi khair. But actually the meaning of it is hope. Hope in one context or fear in the other context. Like you say, la'allaka bi khair. I hope you are good. I hope you are well. La'alla al-mudarris marid. I fear that the teacher is sick. Depending on how it's used, it may mean I hope. If it's something good or if it's something bad, it means I fear. I fear that so-and-so may be ill. I fear that so-and-so didn't make it through or something. Okay? So it has two different meanings, but from the context you can know which one it means. Okay? So these are the things that we're going to take in this lesson. Okay? Inna and la'alla are two of the most important things, and M. These three things are the most important things. Though and the number, Alf and Mia. And what else is in this lesson? That's only five things. One, two, three, four, five. There's something else that I'm forgetting. Oh, I know it is. Ghalin. This word, Ghalin. This word came in the vocabulary. Ghalin. And originally, it's Al-Ghali. Al-Ghali. But the Ya in it is deleted. And the Dhamma of the Ya is deleted. This Ya, Al-Ghali or Ghaliyun. Okay? This word originally should be Ghaliyun. Ghaliyun. Okay? But because of a certain derivation of this word, the Ya is deleted and the Tanween is taken away. Right? So what happens is the Tanween is, the Noon of the Tanween comes here. So we say ghalin, and this does not mean that this word is majroor with kasra. Rather, it's marfoon, except that the ya and its tanween has been deleted. These are the points that we're going to study in this lesson. Okay, so there are 6 points. This is a word that we just need to understand how it came from ghaliyun to ghalin. We need to understand that. And there are words in Arabic like that. We're going to see some examples of it. This right here is the use of the number mia and alf, how they are used. Okay. The word that comes after it, 100 whatever, is going to be singular and it's going to be majroor with kasra. For mia and alf. Okay, dhu is in idafa, whatever is, like you say, dhu ilmin, possessor of knowledge. Okay, so you know that mudaf, mudaf ilay, the mudaf ilay is always majroor. Okay, and as far as this one we got to explain in some detail. These two is just you need to understand the meaning and grammatically how they function. And how they function, inna and la'alla, or inna and akhawatuha, how they function is that when you have a jumla ismiya, a nominal sentence, when you have a nominal sentence, the first word of the nominal sentence, the subject, is called mubtada. And the second word of the nominal sentence is the predicate, it's called the khabar. So you have a mubtada and a khabar. And the mubtada and the khabar both take dhamma, they marfu'un. But when you have inna, it changes them. The mubtada now takes fatta, and the khabar remains with dhamma. Okay, so grammatically, it's going to change the ending of the first word, inna. And likewise, la'alla and the rest of the letters or the particles that are similar to inna. Inna and enna and ka'anna and la'alla and lakinna and layta. All of them are going to function the way we're going to explain it with inna. And this is the first thing we're going to start with, inna. And that's the most important thing in this lesson, inshallah. If you understand that, then this one works the same way. And then this one has to be explained separately, inshallah, the rest of them are simple matters, the other three matters, okay? So today, inshallah, we're going to explain from the key, the grammatical points, 6 points, starting with number one, inna. And then we'll go through the rest of those points as we go through the explanation of the key. And then inshallah, if we read the text today, then you will see how these grammatical points are applied in the text. And then we'll do the exercises so you can apply the rule and make sure that you understand it. Okay, any question that you have about this first one after I read it or while I'm reading it, just stop me. First point, okay? In this lesson we learn the following. Number one, inna. In Arabic there are two types of sentences. The nominal sentence, which in Arabic is called al-jumlatu al-ismiyatu, wherein the first word is a noun. For example, al-kitabu sahlun, the book is easy. The first word is a noun, al-kitab. So that's why it's called a nominal sentence, because the first word is a noun. Okay, in Arabic it's called al-jumla al-ismiyah. Ismiyah because what? The first word is a ism, a noun. So it's called jumla ismiyah. Okay, the noun which commences the nominal sentence is called the mubtada. So if you have a sentence, al-kitabu sahlun, like this sentence, right? This is the sentence we have. This is the nominal sentence. Al-kitabu sahlun. Al-kitabu sahlun. This is a nominal sentence. The first word that begins the sentence is called the mubtada. In English it's called the subject and the predicate, but who cares what it's called in English, right? What it's called in Arabic is mubtada. 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 Okay? Mubtada. The second word is called the khabar. Khabar. Okay, this is the subject of the sentence and this is the predicate. The subject, the mubtada means you begin with it. It's from bada'a. Bada'a means to begin. So it's called mubtada. Mubtada. You begin with this word. This is the word you want to talk about. What about the kitab? It's sahlun. It's easy. Okay? So the khabar is information. Khabar means information. Akhbar means the news. Okay, so the khabar is the information. The mubtada is the word you begin with, and then you want to tell us some khabar, some information about it. Okay, so it's called mubtada and khabar. You begin with this word, and then you tell us something about it. Al-kitabu, what about it? It's sahlun. Al-kitabu, what about it? Sa'bun, it's difficult. Al-kitabu kabirun, it's big. Al-kitabu sagirun. Anything, what do you want to say about the kitab? It's big, it's small, it's easy, it's difficult, whatever. That's the khabar, whatever you want to say about it, okay? So now this is a nominal sentence. It begins with a noun. Al-kitabu. And then you're saying something about sahlun. Okay, so this is what the sentence that we're going to want to deal with in this lesson. This is the first type of sentence in Arabic, the nominal sentence. Okay? The noun which commences the nominal sentence is called the mubtada. Or al-mubtada'u, while the second part is called the khabar, or al-khabaru. The second type of sentence in Arabic is a different kind of sentence. It's called the verbal sentence. That is al-jumlatu al-fi'liyatu. Al-jumlatu al-fi'liyatu. When the first word is a verb, al-fi'liya means fi'l. Fi'l is a verb. Al-jumla ismiya means that the jumla begins with an ism, a noun. Al-jumla fi'liya means that the sentence begins with a fi'l, a verb. And that is where the first word is a verb. For example, kharaja bilalun. Kharaja bilalun. Okay, this is a different kind of sentence here, right? Kharaja bilalun. Bilalun. Okay, the first word of this sentence is a verb, a fi'l. So this is called a jumla fi'liya. The second word is the subject. The subject of the verb, the one who's doing the action, the fa'il. But we're not so much concerned about the jumla fi'liya. We just want to know that there's two types of sentences. One that begins with a noun, it's called a nominal sentence. The other one that begins with a verb, it's called a verbal sentence. In Arabic, it's called jumla ismiya because it begins with an ism. Or it's called jumla fi'liya because it begins with a fi'l, a verb. Okay, an action word. Kharaja bilalun. Bilal went out. Okay? The sentence that we're concerned with now is the first type, the jumla ismiya, nominal sentence. It begins with a noun. And that first word that begins the sentence is called the mubtada, the word that you begin with. And the second word is called the khabar, what you want to say about it, the information. So when inna, the particle inna is used at the beginning of a nominal sentence, it's not used with a verbal sentence. It's only used with a nominal sentence. So we're concerned about the nominal sentence here. Word, a sentence that begins with a noun. When the particle inna is used at the beginning of a nominal sentence, for example, the original sentence we had is what? Al-kitabu sahlun. So what if we want to change this sentence now? We want to put inna here. Inna, right? If we change this sentence, a nominal sentence, and then we put inna at the beginning of it, one thing is that we change the meaning of the sentence, because inna is used for certainty, ta'keed. You want to say something is definite, sure, certain, no doubt. Wa alaykum salam. So the original sentence we had, al-kitabu sahlun, right? The book is easy. Now you want to affirm the certainty of this statement. So you're saying definitely the book is easy. In case a person has doubt, this is used for what? Izalatu shak, to remove any doubt. The person is not sure this book is easy. They're saying, are you sure? You're saying definitely this book is easy. So how do you say definitely? Inna al-kitab sahlun. Before you just said the book is easy. Now you're saying inna al-kitab sahlun. But when you use inna, it changes the ending of the word from marfoon with dhamma to mansoob with fattah. So this is what inna does to a nominal sentence. It changes the vowel of the mubtada from dhamma to fattah. And this one remains the same, the khabar. And also the name of this word, the mubtada, is no longer called the mubtada. Now its name becomes the ism. Ism of inna. Becomes ism inna. The noun that belongs to inna. The inna is affecting, acting upon, changing it from being marfu' with dhamma to mansoob with fattah. Okay, when we're talking about marfu' and mansoob, okay, again, these are terms that, inshallah, we had in the previous class, and I just want you to just kind of have an idea. Marfu'un means that it is what? What do you call this in English? Huh? Nominative? Nominative. Hayyib. And majroor, what do we call this? Genitive. Genitive. And mansoob. Okay, in case somebody is not completely familiar with these expressions, this is called what? Huh? Accusative. These are English expressions. I don't know what they mean in English even. What's nominative, accusative, genitive? I don't know. It doesn't matter. We're not concerned about that. But just so you have an idea when we talk about this, right? Marfu'un in Arabic is when a word has dhamma. And majroorun in Arabic is when a word has kasra. And mansoob is when a word has fatta. Okay, so this one, it takes dhamma. It takes a u vowel. Genitive takes kasra, I vowel. Accusative takes fatta. Okay, the vowel on the end of the word is going to be fatta, kasra, or dhamma, depending on whether it is in any one of these cases. It's marfu'un, or it's majroorun, or it's mansoobun. So originally this word had dhamma. So that means it's what? Dhamma means what? Marfu'un. But now with inna it changed to fatta. So fatta is what? Mansoobun. Alright? So this is the main thing that you need to know. What does inna mean? It means that you are affirming certainty, definiteness. Okay? And how does it work grammatically? It changes the mubtada from dhamma to fatta. And the khabar remains with dhamma. Okay? Now, instead of it being called mubtada and khabar, it's called ism inna. Okay, now after inna comes, instead of we call mubtada, now we call it ism inna, and we call this still khabar, but khabar of inna. Ism of inna and khabar of inna. Alright? So all this is in the notes. But just, you know, like try to grasp the concept of what is happening here. It's not very difficult, When you want to certify or give certainty, affirm something, you use inna, okay? Or anna, but anna will come to in another lesson, okay? But inna for now, we're using this inna. And in terms of meaning, it means that it's definite, it's certain, it's sure. In terms of grammar, changing in the words, it changes the first word from dhamma to fatha. So now we don't say it's marfu, we say it's mansoob. As far as the second word, it remains with dhamma. Marfu. Naam. Naam. Now, you can say, surely the book is easy. Indeed the book is easy. Certainly the book is easy. No, it's the same. Indeed, certainly, surely, verily. All of those words basically have the same meaning for inna. Okay? Depends on what is fit. What's more fitting in your discussion. Maybe a certain word may be more appropriate to use. But basically, when you say certainly, surely, verily, all it means the same. You say you certify that this is a fact. There's no doubt. The purpose of inna is what? The purpose of it is izalat to shek. The person has doubt, you're removing it. Removing the doubt. Certainly, definitely, surely, indeed, verily. All that means the same thing. Huh? Inna al-insana lafi khus. Certainly, definitely, surely, the man is in loss. إِلَّا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا وَعَمِلُوا الصَّالِحَاتِ except those who believe and do good deeds. Enjoying the truth and patience. Huh? إِنَّ الْإِنسَانَ huh? The sentence without إِنَّ is الْإِنسَانُ لَفِي خُسْرٍ الْإِنسَانُ now it became إِنَّ الْإِنسَانَ huh? Why إِنَّ الْإِنسَانَ why is it إِنسَانَ because إِنَّ changed it from مَرْفُون to مَنْسُوب huh? Naam. Inna Allah Azizun Hakim. Naam. Tayyib. So the particle inna is used at the beginning of a nominal sentence. So the sentence that was originally Al-Kitabu Sahlun, it becomes Inna Al-Kitaba Sahlun. Inna Al-Kitaba Sahlun. Now it becomes accusative. Mansubun. Naam. The fatta. In the what? In the khabar, it remains the same. Inna and the akhwat of inna, the other particles that act the same way as inna, the mubtada is changed to fatta. The khabar remains the same. It doesn't change. The khabar does not change. Now. Now. This is a different kind of sentence. Because we don't have a mubtada and a khabar here, right? Inna al-ladhina. You're beginning the sentence with al-ladhina. That's a different kind of sentence. But if the sentence begins with a clear noun, ism zahir, then it will be like this. That clear noun, al-ladhina, is a different kind of word, okay? The i'rab of al-ladhina is different than, okay? Is different than a regular noun like this. Okay, there's different kind of words that some of them, they may change slightly and they may not change. But al-ladhina doesn't originally begin with dhamma, right? So it's not for it to change from dhamma to what? There's no dhamma there. It's al-ladhina. But the noun, the normal noun that has a dhamma, it will change from dhamma to fatha. Huh? Certainly, yeah. Certainly, those who, naam, kafaru, disbelieve, min ahl al-kitab, from the people of the book, wal mushrikeena and the mushrikeena. Certainly they are what? To the end of the ayat. Huh? Certainly, that's the meaning of it. So note that the noun after inna is mansoob. That is, i.e., in the accusative case. Inna al-kitab. Okay, note that the noun after inna became mansoob. It was originally with a dhamma. Now it became mansoob in the accusative case. After the introduction of inna, the mubtada is no longer called mubtada, but instead it is called what? Ismu inna. And the khabar is called khabaru inna. Before was what? Mubtada and khabar. The mubtada is now called ismu inna. And the khabar is called khabaru inna. Inna signifies emphasis. It can be translated as indeed, surely, no doubt, verily, and so on, with many different words that have the same meaning. Note the following. Okay, this is just a note. If the mubtada has one dhamma, like in this example, innal kitaba, originally the sentence was al kitabu, has a single vowel, right? A word can either have a single vowel because it has alif lam, and alif lam and tanween can't go together, right? So if a word has alif lam, it can't have a double vowel, because you can't have tanween and alif lam on the same word. Okay, so one reason why a word may have a single vowel is because it has alif lam. Another reason why a word may have a single vowel, even though it doesn't have alif lam, is because what? Some words don't take tanween. Like what kind of words? All proper names? What about Muhammadun? Words that are mamnoon and sarf. Feminine proper nouns, masculine proper nouns, and tarmabuta, and so on. But the word I'm looking for is words that are mamnoon and sarf. Mamnoon and sarf means they don't take tanween. So there are some words that originally don't take tanween. Some words don't take tanween because they have alif lam. Or they don't take tanween because of what? Idafa. Which word in the Idafa doesn't take tanween? The Mudafun, the first word of the Idafa construction, never takes alif lam or tanween. So the point I'm making is only this, that there are certain words in Arabic language that because of certain situation or circumstance, or some of them never take tanween, so they may have a single vowel. So if a word has a single vowel, either because of alif lam, or because of Idafa, or because of whatever reason, mamnoom and asarf, if a word has a single vowel, when inna enters upon it, it remains as a single vowel. But that vowel changed from Dhamma to Fatha. But what if the word originally has tanween, has a double vowel? When inna comes upon it, it still has a double vowel, but the double vowel changed from a double Dhamma to a double Fatha. That's the only point that we want to say here, right? That if a word has a single Dhamma, it changed to a single Kasra. If it has a double Dhamma, it changed to a double Kasra. We're just saying it changed from marfu'un with Dhamma, Fatha, a double Fatha. We're saying that it changed from marfu'un with Dhamma, either single Dhamma or double Dhamma, to mansubun with Fatha. Single Fatha or double Fatha. If it originally had a single Dhamma, it becomes a single Fatha. If it originally had a double Dhamma, it becomes a double Fatha. For example, we're going to have an example right here. Inna Muhammadan. If it was Muhammadun, it becomes Inna Muhammadan. Okay? So, we're saying if the Mubtada'u has a Dhamma, one Dhamma, it changes to one Fatta after Inna. For example, Al Mudarrisu Jadidun becomes Inna Al Mudarrisa Jadidun. Okay, was Al Mudarrisu, it becomes Al Mudarrisa. Single Dhamma becomes single Fatha. That's because it had a single Dhamma because why? Because it has Alif Lam. In the next example, it has Aminatu Talibatun. It becomes Inna Aminata Talibatun. The second word remains with its Dhamma. Only the first word is changed. So the first word, Aminatu, had a single vowel. So when you change it from Dhamma to Fatha, it remains a single vowel, but a single Fatha. Alright? Why does Aminatu not have Tanween? Because it's Mamnoom and Asarf. Because it's what? Feminine proper nouns. Feminine proper nouns do not take Tanween. Alright? That's one point. Second, if the Mubtada has two Dhammas, like Hamidun, Maridun, the two Dhammas change to two Fattas. It becomes Inna Hamidan Maridun. The Maridun remains the same. Only the first word, Hamidun, becomes Inna Hamidan. Okay? So if the Mubtada, before Inna enters upon it, has a single vowel, it remains a single vowel, but it changed from Dhamma to Fatta. If the Mubtada, before Inna enters upon it, has a double Dhamma, it remains a double vowel, but becomes a double Fatta. So, Hamidun becomes Inna Hamidan. Inna only affects the Mubtada. It only affects the mubtada. If the mubtada, this is a new point, if the mubtada is a pronoun, it changes to its corresponding mansub form. For example, anta ghaniyun. For example, what? Anta, this is a sentence. Anta ghaniyun. Ghaniyun, right? This is a mubtada. Anta ghaniyun is a khabar. Before the mubtada we had is a regular noun. Al-kitab, al-bab, al-miftah. But now this mubtada is a pronoun. It's not a regular noun, it's a pronoun. What is a pronoun? It's a noun that takes the place of another noun. Takes its place. Takes the place of a proper, a common noun. Takes the place of a common noun. Okay? So for example, you say, anta ghaniyun. Anta is a pronoun. Anta is a pronoun, a damir. Okay? Pronoun. That's a damir. Damir. If the mubtada is a pronoun and inna comes, you do not say inna anta ghaniyun, because this anta is the form of a pronoun when it is marfu'un. The mubtada is marfu'un, but when the pronoun is the object of a preposition, or when it is the ism inna, you have to use, because the ism inna is mansub, right? So you have to use the mansub form of the pronoun. Remember in book 1, when we had pronouns, remember we had huwa, hiya, anta, anti. But when it was connected to a preposition, you said, you didn't say ila huwa, you said what? You didn't say ila anta, you said what? Huh? You didn't say ila antum, but instead of antum, you use kum. You say assalamu alaykum. You don't say assalamu ala antum. Assalamu ala antum. You don't say ala antum, because ala is a preposition. And the preposition, the word of the preposition is majrur. So you got to use a different form of the pronoun here, right? So you say ala antum. No, ala kum. Alaykum. Assalamu alaykum. Huh? So those pronouns that we learned in book 1, you got to learn them. Okay, we're going to see them inshallah in the book. In exercise number 3, we're going to see all the pronouns. For example, ana, if you have it with a preposition or with the ism inna like this, then the change of the form would be from ana to ni, inni, or innani. Anta would be innaka. Anti, innaki. Like we had kitabuka, kitabuki, kitabuhu, kitabuha. We had those pronouns. Kitabuhum. Those are the pronouns that you're going to use with inna. Okay, you're going to use those pronouns. Okay, we'll see that in exercise number 3 as we go through the exercises. Alright, so the point is that you have to use the pronoun in its mansub form that we will get in exercise number 3, inshallah. Okay, if the mubtada is a pronoun, it changes to its corresponding mansub form. For example, anta becomes ka. Anti becomes ki. Antum becomes kum. Antunna becomes kunna. We learned those pronouns in book 1. So instead of saying inna anta, you're going to say innaka. Like Allah said in the Quran, innaka ala khuluqin azim. Talking to who? The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Innaka. Allah is talking directly to the Prophet. Verily you are on a high level of character. Khuluqin azim. Innaka. Allah didn't say inna anta ya Rasulullah. No, he said inna anta. Innaka ala khuluqin azim. Ala deenin azim. Al-Islam. Naam. Tayyib. Also it says for the mansub forms of all the pronouns, see exercise number 3 in the main book. We will get to that when we have to read the dialogue. Note that the pronouns of the first person singular and first person plural have two forms. So for first person singular, I, Anna, you can say innani or inni. Inni or innani. And for the plural, instead of we, nahnu, You can say inna or innana with an extra noon. Inni or innani. Inna or innana. That's what it says here. Okay? So those two, the singular and plural first person, have two forms that you can use with them. You can use a single noon or a double noon. Because you already have a noon from inna, right? So you can just use that and just say inni or inna nahnu. Huh? Inna, Allah said in the Quran, right? Inna nahnu nazzalna alayka al-dhikr. Now, inna, that means verily, nahnu, we. But here Allah said, inna nahnu. So he used the accusative form and he used the marfu'an form. That's for extra emphasis. We, verily we, definitely we, have revealed upon you the dhikr. Wa inna nahnu lahafidun. And we will protect and preserve it. That is the Quran. Okay, this is point number one. Point number one, what? Is inna. It changes the mubtada from the name of mubtada to ism inna. Changes it from dhamma to fatta. It changes the khabar from just being a regular khabar to khabaru inna, the khabar of inna. But its ending remains the same. And it means what? Emphasis, certainty, definiteness. Tayyib, that's the most important point of this lesson. The second point of this lesson is la'alla. And la'alla is what is called one of the sisters of inna. When we say the sisters of inna, akhawatu inna, akhawatu inna means that there are other particles like inna that act in the same way. That is, they change the mubtada of a jumla ismiya, they change it from dhamma to fatha. And the khabar remains the same. There are other particles like inna that do the same thing. The meaning of them is different. Inna is for what? Emphasis, certainty. La'alla has a different meaning. La'alla La'alla, its meaning, it has two meanings. Hope, at-tarajji, and fear, ishqaq. That either you have hope of something good happening or you fear that something bad is happening. Okay, it has two meanings. Hope and fear. La'alla. But as far as when you enter upon a sentence, jumla ismiya, it does the same thing that inna does. It makes the first word of the sentence, the mubtada, it makes it change it from marfu with dhamma to mansub with fatta. And the second word, the khabar remains the same. Okay, la'alla, this is also a particle like inna. It is called one of the sisters, the akhawat of inna. Grammatically, it acts like inna. It signifies, though, grammatically it acts like inna. But as far as its meaning, it means hope or fear. For example, if you have a sentence, al-jawu jamilun, the weather is fine. If you say la'alla al-jawu jamilun, al-jawu becomes after la'alla al-jawwa with fatta. La'alla al-jawwa jamilun, I hope the weather is fine. Another example, the other meaning of la'alla is al-mudarrisu maridun, the teacher is sick. If you said la'alla al-mudarris maridun, al-mudarrisu becomes al-mudarrisa. La'alla al-mudarrisa maridun. Here, the meaning is not I hope the teacher is sick. That's not the meaning. No. The meaning here is I fear, I am afraid the teacher is sick. Okay? If it's something good, then you say the meaning is I hope. But if it's something bad, the meaning is, I fear. Okay, yes, in America, the kuffar, naam, when they go to school, they say, I hope the teacher is sick today. So we can get a substitute, so we can play around and throw spitballs at them and act stupid. Naam. But alhamdulillah, we don't act like that. Naam, we hope, inshallah, we hope our teacher don't get sick. Naam. Okay, so la'alla, it has two meanings, hope and fear. From the context of the sentence, you can know which one is intended. Okay? Normally, la'alla, hope meaning hope, is normally used for something good. You hope for something good to happen. I hope you are successful. I hope you get better, I hope, whatever, something good. If you use it for the other meaning, it's something bad, that you think something bad happened, لَعَلَّ يعني هو وقع في شيء, يعني something happened to him, he fell into some difficulty or whatever. Okay, that means you fear, you're afraid that something bad happened. I'm afraid that something bad happened. I mean, I hear from this brother in a long time. I'm afraid something happened to him. Okay, لَعَلَّ, that's the meaning of لَعَلَّ here. Okay, that's the meaning of لَعَلَّ. The third point here is ذو. The word, this word means having or possessing. For example, ذو مالٍ means possessing. مال means wealth, possessing wealth. وَعَلَيْكُمْ السَّلَامُ. Or, for example, it means وَعَلَيْكُمْ السَّلَامُ. Possessing wealth means what? Wealthy. ذو خُلُقٍ, possessing manners, good manners, good character, i.e. well-mannered. ذو عِلْمٍ, possessing knowledge, i.e. learned. Okay, ذو means possessing. Somebody possess, have something. Okay, it means صاحب. ذو in Arabic means صاحب, the one who possess something. صاحب المال, ذو مال, meaning possess wealth. صاحب العلم means what? ذو علم, he possess knowledge. Person is knowledgeable. You say he is ذو علم. Person has money, you say he is ذو مال. ذو أموال كثيرة, he possesses a lot of wealth, very wealthy. نعم, and so on. Notice that it is always مضاف. يعني this word ذو is always used in إضافة. So the ذو is مضاف, and the following word is مضاف إليه. And therefore, the following word which مضاف إليه, it is مجرور. Because we say, we study إضافة, the first word of إضافة construction is always it can take Dhamma, Kasra, Fatha. But the second word of the إضافة construction must take Kasra, it's always Majroor. So the first word here, the ذو, is the مضافٌ, and the word that's connected to it is مضافٌ إليه مجرور with Kasra. مجرور, genitive case with Kasra. Okay, so whenever you're saying possessor of something, you're saying this one, this person, or this thing is the possessor of such and such. That's مضاف, مضاف إليه. The second word, the possessed, is مجرور with كسرة. نعم, ذو الجلال والإكرام. ذو الجلال, one of the names of Allah, ذو الجلال والإكرام, the one who possesses majesty and honor. ذو الجلال, مجرور with كسرة. جزاك الله خير, good example, perfect example. طيب, the next sentence says, بلال ذو علم وأخته ذات خلق. Bilal is a possessor of knowledge, he's learned, and his sister أخته is a possessor of good character, well mannered. Possessor, she possesses good manners, good character. Notice that the word for ذو, for the feminine, changed from ذو to what? ذات. So the feminine form of ذو is ذات. So there's a feminine form, and there's also a plural masculine and a plural feminine. As we will see here, the plural of ذو is ذو, and the plural of ذات is ذوات. So you say, for example, هذا الطالب, masculine singular, ذو خلق. What does this mean? هذا الطالب ذو خلق. What does that mean? This student possesses good character, is well mannered, has good character. Plural masculine, هؤلاء الطلاب. هؤلاء الطلاب ذو خلق. Meaning, these students, masculine plural, these students possess good character, well-mannered. Naam, walaikum salam. Going down, walaikum salam. Feminine, singular. Hadihi at-talibatu dhatu khulukin. Hadihi at-talibatu dhatu. Feminine, singular, khulukin. Meaning what? This female student possesses good character or is well mannered. Naam. Feminine plural, haulai at-talibatu. Zawatu khulukin. Zawatu khulukin mean what? These female students possess good character. So we have dhu and dhawu. That's masculine, singular and plural. And you have dhatu and dhawatu, feminine, singular and plural. Now. Naam. Dhatu, dhawatu. Naam. So these four forms of the word dhu all have the same basic meaning. But one is masculine, singular, feminine, singular, or masculine, plural, feminine, plural. Okay, so you have to learn these four words. With dhu, you have to learn masculine, plural, dhawu. For feminine, dhatu. And zawatu. Zatu and zawatu. Anyway, these are just vocabulary words to memorize. That's point number three. Okay? Zo means possessor of what? The four words here, zo and zawu. And zatu and zawatu. They're there, listed right there in the key. Okay, that's point number three. Okay, point number four. Point number four requires your attention. Point number four requires your attention. Okay? We have two words that I mentioned earlier, right? That mean or. Am and au. Both of them mean or. But each one is used in a particular manner. Okay? They are not interchangeable. When you want to say or, you have to depend, it depends on how you use it in a sentence. Whether you use au, that we've been using before, or you use am. Okay, what determines it? The use of this or in the sentence, how it is used. Generally speaking, am is used in an interrogative sentence, when you're asking a question about two things that you want the person to specify which one of them. Are you a teacher or a student? Are you going to Mecca or Medina? Did you see Bilal or Muhammad? Okay, you're asking a question about two things and you want the person to specify which one it is. That's when you use M. If it's not a question, you're just saying, I had some apples, or I want some apples or oranges. That's not a question, that's a statement. So you don't use M, you use or. I want apples or oranges. When you go to the store, pick me up some apples or some oranges. Does that mean you want apples and oranges? No. You want one or the other. But this is not a question. This is a statement. M is used in interrogative, yani istifham, when you're asking a question about two things, you want to specify which one. Au is used in a general statement, okay, not in an interrogative question statement. Sometimes al can be used also in a question, but not with hamzat al-istifham. And we may come to that, inshallah. But for now, this is the basic difference between them. If you use hamzat al-istifham, yani the hamza with fatha to ask a question about two different things, you want the person to specify, you have to use m. But if you use the different question form, like hell, then we can use ow with it. Okay? But basically, M is used for asking a question, and ow is used for statements about two or more things. Okay, let's see what it says here. M, it means or, but only in an interrogative sentence. For example, أَطَبِيبٌ أَنْتَ أَمْ مُهَنْدِسٌ. Okay, using Hamzat al-Istifham, and you're asking about two things. The question about two things. Are you a doctor or an engineer? But notice that the first thing that you're asking about has to come immediately after Hamzat al-Istifham. And the second thing that you're asking about has to come immediately after M. Without anything else preceding them, right? Meaning, instead of saying, أَأَنْتَ طَبِيبٌ أَمْ مُهَنْدِسٌ, don't put أَنْتَ first. But the thing you're asking about is the person a doctor or a muhandis. So you got to put doctor first before you put anta. You don't say anta tabibun. You say atabibun anta am muhandis. Okay, there's a difference between saying anta tabibun am muhandis. That's wrong. You don't say anta tabibun. You say atabibun anta. Because what are you asking about? You're asking the person a doctor or engineer. So you have to put doctor or engineer first. One of them comes after Hamzatul Istifham and the other one comes after M. Okay, for example, Amin Faransa Hua Amin Almania. What are you asking about? Is he from France or from Germany? So don't say Ahua Min Faransa, but rather Amin Faransa Hua Am Almania. Or min Almania. Is he from France or Germany? Abilalun ra'aita am hamidun. Did you see Bilal or Hamid? You don't say ara'aita bilalan am hamidan. You don't say ara'aita bilalan. You say abilalan ra'aita. Because you're asking about Bilal or Hamid. The two things you're asking about is, it was it Bilal or Hamid? So Bilal or Hamid, one of them has to become after Hamzatul Istifham immediately. And the other one comes after M. Note that the particle, Hamzatul Istifham, precedes one of the two things about which the question is asked, while M precedes the other. So it is wrong to say, أَأَنْتَ مُدَرِّسٌ أَمْ طَالِبٌ. But rather you should say what? أَمُدَرِّسٌ أَنْتَ أَمْ طَالِبٌ. Okay? It is wrong to say, أَذَهَبْتَ إِلَى مَكَّةَ أَمْ جِدَّةَ أَذَهَبْتَ إِلَى مَكَّةَ أَمْ جِدَّةَ. But rather you should say, أَإِلَى مَكَّةَ ذَهَبْتَ أَمْ جِدَّةَ. In other words, you don't say, أَذَهَبْتَ إِلَى مَكَّةَ. Rather you say, أَإِلَى مَكَّةَ ذَهَبْتَ. Because إِلَى مَكَّةَ or إِلَى جِدَّةَ is what you're asking about. The correct construction is أَمُدَرِّسٌ أَنْتَ أَمْ طَالِبٌ أَإِلَى مَكَّةَ ذَهَبْتَ أَمْ إِلَى جُدَّةَ. In the non-interrogative sentence, أَوْ is used for or. For example, take this or that. خُذْ هَذَا أَوْ ذَاكَ. I saw three or four. رَأَيْتُ ثَلَاثَةً أَوْ أَرَبَعَةً. Bilal or Hamid went out. Kharaja Bilalun or Hamidun. Okay, these are in non-interrogative sentences where they're not asking a question. But if it's an interrogative question and you're using Hamzatul Istifham to ask about two things, then the first thing you're asking about has to come immediately after Hamzatul Istifham. Then the rest of the sentence that you want to put with it. And then the second thing that you're asking about has to come after M. In non-interrogative sentence, you can use أو. Take this or that. I saw this one or that one. I went to this place or that place. This is not a question. You can say أو. Okay? But if it's an interrogative sentence, using Hamzatul Istifham, you have to do it in this way. You have to put the first thing you're asking about immediately after the Hamza, and the second thing you're asking about immediately after M. Now, in non-question statements. And M is used for questions. No, the meaning of M and the meaning of OW is OR. Both of them mean the same thing. Both of them mean OR. But one is used when you're asking a question, and the other one is used when you're making a statement. If you're making a statement, I saw Bilal or Hamid. That's not a question, you're making a statement. So you can say Bilal or Hamid. Because it's not a question. But if you're making a question, you say Bilal M. But you say A Hamza to the Istifham first, and then you mention Bilal. And after M, you mention Hamid. Or whatever it is, the second thing that you're asking about. This type of construction is a little bit tricky. Okay? That's why I say when I started to read it, pay attention. This kind of construction is a little bit tricky. I don't think we have any construction like this in English. Okay, so you have to concentrate when you use this type of construction. You have to concentrate. Remember, generally speaking, if you're making a statement, you can use al for or. But if you're asking a question, you should use am. That's the general rule. But if it's with hamzatul istifham that you're asking a question, you have to use am. طيب انا اريد تفحة او موزا نعم that's a statement you say او نعم طيب in any case when we read the dialogue we will see how this is used a little bit more and when we do the exercise specifically designed to practice how you use this construction. Okay, if you understand the general principle, that's sufficient. Until we get to the exercises. Then you're going to have to apply it. Then I'm going to call on you. You got to do it. Okay, but if you don't understand the principle, how it works, ask. And we'll explain it again, no problem. If you understand the general principle, it's just a matter of now practicing with it. Once you start practicing, it will come okay. But without practicing, the first time you hear it, you say, I don't know how to do that. But if you understand the principle, that when you're asking a question about two different things, this is going to be the construction you're going to use. You're going to use hamzatul istifham, the first thing you're asking about, the rest of the sentence, then am, and the second thing you're asking about. That's how it's going to be done. Inshallah, the exercises will bring out a little bit more, and then when you start doing it, practicing it, that's when it will actually stick with you. This is why the exercises are so important. For you to write them, for you to read them, and for you to listen to them. Listen to the audio files and hear it so that you start hearing it so that your brain, the part of your brain that takes in audio information will start working when you listen to it. But if you don't listen to it, the part of your brain that takes in visual information is only going to be working. Then when you hear it, it's not going to sound right. It's not going to make any sense to you because it's going to be confusing. So you didn't filter that type of information through your brain before. So you didn't practice. You didn't learn how to do it. You start doing push-ups, right, the first time? Remember how difficult it was? You probably don't remember. It was so long ago, right? And if you're old, you probably don't remember because you haven't done them in so long. طيب. Point number 5. Mia and Alf. Miatun and Alfun. This is one of the easier points in this lesson that doesn't require much consideration. These are two numbers. They're similar to the numbers that we had in book 1 from 3 to 10. That means that the number is mudaf and the thing that is being counted is mudafun ilayhi. The adad is mudaf and the ma'adur is mudaf ilayhi. Except that here, no matter if the ma'adur is masculine or feminine, then the word alf and mia doesn't change. Alf remains when the ma'adur is masculine or feminine the same. And mia, miyatu, it remains the same, no matter if the ma'adur is masculine or feminine. It's going to remain the same. Okay, so just keep that in mind. And also, since it's mudafu ilayh, the ma'adur is going to always be what? Majroor. It's always going to be majroor. Okay? So, note that in miyatun, the alif is not pronounced in the word miya. Huh? In this word mia, we spell it with what? Mim, kasra, alif, hamza, fatta, ta marbuta. This alif in mia is not pronounced. Okay? This is pronounced as though the alif is not there. Mi-a-tun. As though this alif is non-existent. In some countries, they do write it without the alif. The way it's pronounced. Like this. But mostly it will be written with the aleph. Okay? The aleph, as we learned in level 1, beginner's Arabic, those of you who are with us in beginner's Arabic, we learned in the last 10 lessons of beginner's Arabic that there are words in Arabic that are written with letters that are not pronounced. Huh? And there are words in Arabic that are written with letters that are not written, but they are pronounced. Like the Aleph in Thalika. The Aleph in Thalika is not written, but it's pronounced. The first Aleph in Hatha. It's two long vowels, but the first one is not written. So there are words in Arabic where a letter is pronounced that's not written. And there are words in Arabic where the letter is written but it's not pronounced. You have to memorize those words. They're not millions of words. They're only a few words. Okay, so Mir is one of them. The Aleph is written but it's not pronounced. That's all you really need to know about the way it is written. That the Aleph is written but it's not pronounced. It is pronounced as though there's no Aleph Mi'atun. In certain countries it is also written like this without the Aleph. After these two numbers, the Ma'adud. After the Adad, the Ma'adud is singular majrur. For example, Mi'atu Kitabin. The Ma'adud, the thing that you are counting, books, is what? It is singular. Even though you're saying 100 books in English, right? But in Arabic, it's singular. Mi'atu Kitabin. Don't say Mi'atu Kutubin. Singular, majroor. And likewise with alf. Alfu rialin. Rialin, even though you're saying 1,000 rials, but the word rial in Arabic is singular. So the thing that you're counting in Arabic with the word 100 and 1,000, the thing that you're counting, the ma'adud, is always going to be singular. Even though you're saying 100 of them or 1,000 of them, the word that you're going to use is going to be singular and it's going to be majroor. And also, the word alfun and mi'atun, because it's an idafa, it's mudaf, right? It's not going to take tanween, right? So alfun is going to be alfu, and mi'atun is going to be mi'atu. In this sentence, hadha at-talfazu bi alfi riyalin. Bi alfi riyalin. Notice that alfa has kasra, right? Here, alifi is majroor because of the preposition be. And here, we want to mention, right, that as when we studied mudaf mudaf ilay, we said that the second word of the idafa, in this case it's the adad and ma'adud, the second word of the idafa is always majroor and it takes kasra, right? But the first word of the idafa, it doesn't take alif, lam, or tanween. As far as its vowel, it could be any vowel. It could be fatha, kasra, or dhamma. So we were originally making it as dhamma, right? But in this sentence, because it has the preposition before, bi alfi or bi mi'ati, because of the preposition, it becomes majrur. So the first part of the idafa construction can take any vowel, fatha, kasra, or dhamma. Normally it will take dhamma, unless there's something changing it. If it's the object of a preposition, it will become majrur with kasra. If it's the object of a verb, it will become mansub with what? Mansub with fatha. Fatha, wake up. It's almost over. Taib. Also note that mi'atun and alfun have the same form with feminine ma'adud. For example, alfu muslimatin and mi'atu talibatin. So in other words, it doesn't matter if the ma'adud, the thing you're counting with alf, doesn't matter if it's masculine or feminine, alf remains the same. And the same thing with mi'atu. It doesn't matter if the ma'adud is masculine or feminine, it still remains in the same form with ta marbuta. There's no change in it. Okay, so what do we want to know about alf and mi'ah? The only thing we want to know about it is that the thing that you're counting is always going to be singular. The ma'adud, the thing that you're counting is always going to be singular, and it's going to be majroor. As far as the number itself, alf and mi'ah, since it's an idafa, it's not going to take tanween. It's going to take a single vowel, but that single vowel could be fatha, could be kasra, or could be, most commonly, it's going to be dhamma. But if it's the object of a preposition, it's going to change the kasra. If it's the object of a verb, it's going to become mansub with fatha. Tayyib. The last point here is ghalin, the word ghalin. We had this word here, ghalin, right? Originally, this word is ghaliyun. Ghaliyun. But when this ya is removed and the tanween is removed, the noon sound from the tanween is transferred to the kasra that's left here and it becomes ghalin. from غاليو it becomes غالين. This is a special type of word that we will see some different types of it as we go along, and we'll discuss the composition of the word when we study صرف later. But the point is here that don't be deceived by these kind of words that they are مجرور. It's not مجرور. Even though it has كسرة, it's not مجرور. Its original form is غاليو. It's مرفون. It's مرفون. Okay, that word there is masculine. If it's feminine, then it will take ترمبوت. Then, if it's feminine, the ya will remain. Because it will become what? غاليةٌ. So the ya will remain. But in the masculine form, the ya is deleted. And the tanween is deleted from the ya, and the noon sound from it is transferred to the kasra. This is a sarf point. Yani in sarf, composition of words that is not really for us to, like, don't dwell on it. Okay, this is not on this level. Okay, but just, it's mentioned here, just so you know that there's a reason. It's not just, they just made it up like that. There's some reason for it, and some basis for it, and certain type of words we will see are constructed in this way. Okay, so what he says here, غالٍ means expensive. هذا الكتاب غالٍ. This book is expensive. هذا is the مبتدا. الكتاب is what? بدل, بدل, بدل. Whenever you have an اسم إشارة, هذا وهذه وذلك وتلك وأولئك وهؤلاء, whenever you have an اسم إشارة followed by a noun with alif lam, it's بدل. Noun with alif lam is بدل. Okay, if you say هذا كتاب, this is a book. But if you say هذا الكتاب, that's not a sentence. This means this book. That's بدل, this book. What about this book? غالٍ, it is expensive. غالٍ. I mentioned this point here about بدل because I know that we forget quick. And I want to remind you that we studied this in book one. Okay, so I'm reminding you. هذا الكتاب غالٍ. هذا is مبتدا. الكتاب is بدل. غالٍ is what? خبر. And the خبر is مرفوعٌ or مجرورٌ. مجرور. The mubtada is always marfu'un, and the khabar is always marfu'un. This word ghalin is marfu'un. If I ask a question, watch out. I'm trying to see if you're sleeping or not. The mubtada and khabar is always marfu'un. We just got finished saying that up here. Mubtada and khabar. Al-kitabu sahlun. Mubtada is marfu'un. Khabar is marfu'un. Don't be deceived by ghalin because it has two kasras. The mubtada and the khabar is always marfu'un. Okay, so ghalin is marfu'un. Okay, but it has a special construction. So it looks like it's majrurun, but actually it's marfu'un. He says here the letter ya with its dhamma has been omitted and the noon of tanween has been transferred to the preceding letter. Ghaliyun becomes ghalin. Here are some more words of this type. Muhammin. Muhammin originally is what? Muhammiyun. For example, you can say, Ana Muhammin. I am a lawyer. Originally this word is Muhammi with ya and tanween. Muhammiyun. Muhammiyun. But the ya is deleted. And one of its dhammas is deleted so that the tanween is transferred to the kasra of Muhammi. Becomes Muhammin. Same thing with Qadin, a judge. Originally it's Qadiyun. But the ya is deleted, it becomes Qadin. So you say Ana Qadin or Abi Qadin. My father is the judge. Naam. Wadin, a valley. That's marfu'un. But originally it's Wadiyun. Wadiyun. But the ya is deleted. So it becomes wadin. Hada wadin. This is a valley. This is a mubtada and a khabar. Hada is the mubtada and wadin is the khabar and it's marfu'un. But the ya is deleted. Now, every khabar is marfu'un. Every mubtada is marfu'un. If inna int is upon it, it's no longer mubtada, right? Now it's ism inna. an ism in is mansubun. But the khabar and mubtada are always marfoon. You will learn later more about this class of nouns, inshaAllah ta'ala. That is, words like muhamin and qadin and wadin. We will learn about this in sarf, but not here. Okay, after this, the exercises, this is the translation of the instructions for each exercise. In case you get stumped on any exercise and you don't know what they ask you to do, you could go back here and look and see. Exercise number one wants you to answer the following questions. Exercise number two wants you to mark, is it a correct statement or incorrect, and so on. At the end, we have the vocabulary. This is what we are concerned about, the grammatical points and the vocabulary. As far as the instructions for the exercises, you are supposed to know the instructions for the exercise. But in case you get stumped and you don't remember what a word in the exercise means, you don't know what you're supposed to do, go back to the key and look and see what exercise number is it, and they will tell you what they want you to do. Okay, as far as the vocabulary, we have miyatun on the right side of the column, alfun and rubiya. Rupee, a rupee is what? What's a rupee? It's a currency in what? In India. Maybe in Pakistan too. In Urdu, in the Urdu language. Tayyib. Okay, also we have zakiyun, which means intelligent. Ghabiyun, which means stupid. Khuluqun, which means manners or character. And then we have on the last page, Safhatun. Safhatun, which means page. Safhatun. Najihun, which means one who has passed the examination. Najihun. Then we have Ghalin, expensive. Kummun, with shadda on the meme, which means a sleeve, like a shirt sleeve or a coat sleeve. And then we have mutazawijun, with shadda on the waw and kasra underneath the shadda. Mutazawijun, mutazawijun, married. Azabun, unmarried. Azabun. Yahudiyun, means a Jew. Yahudiyun means a Jew, singular. Yahudun means Jews, collectively. Mu'jamun means a dictionary. What's another word for dictionary? Qamus, naam. Dolarun means what? A dollar. Tayyib. Okay, the vocabulary words, as I said, there are not that many words in this lesson. Alhamdulillah, it's only, what, 14 words about? So if you learn two words every day, inshallah, by the time you come back to class next week, you should know all the words in the vocabulary. But if you learn three words every day, then inshallah, you'll finish before next week. If you learn four words every day, mashallah, you can start memorizing the vocabulary for the next chapter. I got it. Tayyib. We have a little bit of time left, and in these few minutes, inshallah, what we're going to do is read the text for the first lesson, and in case you don't remember, you always have homework, whether I say it or not, right? If I forget to say you have homework, don't say, you forgot to tell us. I will say, you forgot that I already told you that we always have homework. And your homework is that you do the exercises from the lesson that we did in the class. You write them out. If we do them orally in the class, for homework, you have to write them out. If we didn't do them yet, then you have to write them out anyway. And then when we come to class, we'll do them orally. And whatever you can't do, leave it blank. When you come to class, we'll fill them in. I don't think we have any books in the library here for this book. But we'll try to help with you some kind of way, inshallah. Whoever has an email address, then we sent out the link for the download this book from the internet and the key and the audio files. Okay, again, homework is do the exercises. Do the exercises that we're going to do orally next week in the class, inshallah. Alright, let's read. We need two readers. Naam, we need Hashim and we need Al-Mudarris. We need two readers. Naam, Talib and Mustafa. Talib and Mustafa. Listen up, listen up. Let's read. Listen up. Now, we only have a few minutes remaining for the adhan. Actually, time for the class is over. So if you have to leave, you're free. It's okay. Inshallah. You can listen to this on the audio. Now, if somebody has to leave to go someplace, the time for the class is over. You're free. But if you can stay, inshallah, you will be guaranteed, bi'idhnillahi ta'ala, to catch the jama'ah and get 27 times more reward than praying on the road, trying to catch it somewhere else. Ad-darsu al-awwalu, the first lesson. Al-awwalu means the first. Al-thani means the second, huh? These are words you have to learn. Ad-darsu al-awwalu. If you didn't learn them already, you're supposed to learn them in the last book. Type Hashim, yani Talib, read. As-salamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Naam. Wa alaykum as-salam. Notice that there's a what there? You don't see it, but there's a hamza til wasl, right? Means join what's before it to what's after it. Wa alaykum as-salam. Wa alaykum as-salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. We don't say wa alaykum as-salam. You say wa alaykum as-salam. Naam. Hashim. Haluka.
Haluka. Ya ustadu. La'alaka bi'khayrin.
Kayfa haluka. Ya ustadu. Ya ustadu with a single vowel after ya and nida. La'allaka bi'khayrin. What does that mean? La'allaka bi'khayrin. La'alla means I hope or I fear. Here it means I hope. I hope that you are good, you are well, you are fine. La'allaka bikhayrin. I hope that you are well. Naam, mudarris.
Alhamdulillah. Wa kayfa haluka anta ya Hisham?
He said, Alhamdulillahi. Huh? Why is it Alhamdulillahi? Li. Naam, harf jar. Lillahi. Alhamdulillahi. Wa kayfa haluka anta ya Hashimu. With a single vowel. Naam. أنا أحبك كثيرا يا حاشم. نعم.
إنك طالب ذكي ومجتهد وذو خلق.
نعم. إنك verily أنت. إن أنت. إنك verily you are طالب ذكي ومجتهد وذو خلق. Intelligent. Mujtahidun, diligent, hard working, ذو خلق, possessor of good manners and character. Huh? I don't know what you're saying. 2 minutes? I think there's one maybe. Naam. Okay, naam. ذو خلق means what?
Possessor of good manners.
Read. طيب أمن باكستان. Why is it باكستان? Because من is حرف جار and باكستان is ممنوع من الصرف. It doesn't take كسرة. أمن باكستان أنت أم من الهند يا هاشم. This is the construction that we're talking about. He's asking about two things. Are you from Pakistan or are you from India? So the first one comes after Hamzat al-Istifham. Are you from Pakistan? Anta am min al Hind. These are the two things you ask him. Min Pakistan or min Hind? Which one are you from? Okay, so it's like this. A min Pakistana. Anta am min al Hindi. Min al Hindi, ya Hashim. Now read. Inni, or you could say innani. There are two forms you can use. Inni or innani. Min al Hindi. Naam. Naam. Wazamiluka. And what about your friend, your associate, your classmate, I mean. وَزَمِيلُكَ الَّذِي خَرَجَ مَعَكَ الْآنَ مِنَ الْفَصْلِ الَّذِي خَرَجَ مَعَكَ الْآنَ. The one who came out with you just now from the classroom. أَهُوَ أيضا من الهند. أهو أيضا من الهند. Is he also from الهند؟ نعم. Is he؟ لا، إنه من باكستان. من باكستان. فتى because it's مجرور. It's ممنوع من الصرف. ممنوع من الصرف. Doesn't take كسرة. It takes فتى. نعم. Read.
إن ساعتك جميلة يا هاشم.
نعم. إن ساعتك. The word here is ساعتك. ساعتا. That's the end of the word. كا is a pronoun that's added, right? So the word that's the ism إن is ساعتا. سا إن ساعتا. كا is the damir that's added. Your watch. Your watch is جميلة يا هاشم. من الياباني هي. من الياباني. من الياباني هي. Is it from Japan? Answer. لا إنها. يعني ها means what? It's referring back to what? It's referring back to the watch, which is feminine, right? سا is feminine. So هي becomes ها. إن هي. إنها. لا إنها من الهندي. You don't say لا إن هي. You say إنها من الهندي. نعم. أغالية. This is the word غال. When it's feminine, you say what? غالية. غالية. أغالية هي because it's feminine. أم رخيصة. Here's our construction again. You're asking is it expensive or is it inexpensive? So the first thing you're asking about comes after همزة الاستفهام. أغالية. Is it يعني expensive أم رخيصة or inexpensive? نعم. إنها innaha. Instead of saying the watch, right? Innahiya, you say innaha rakhisatun jiddan. Very inexpensive. Innaha. Verily, it is bimiyati rubiya. Just 100 rupees. Faqat. Faqat only. Naam.
Kam
akhan laka ya. Do you say kam akh? كم أخا لك. Can you say كم أخا عندك. عندك is used for things that you possess and لك is used for people, relations. عندك and لك mean basically the same, but you use لك for people. عندك for things that you possess. نعم. Read next page. نعم لي ثلاثة إخوة. This مضاف مضاف إليه. ثلاثة إخوة. نعم. Go ahead. الطلاب هم. نعم. Read. تاجر. It's plural is what? What's the plural of تاجر? تجار. فعال. تجار. إنهم تجار. نعم. Read. وكم أخت لك. نعم.
لي أربع أخوات.
مضاف مضاف إليه. أربع أخوات. نعم. أفي الهندي هن الآن. Are they in India now?
لا إنهن هنا في المدينة سوار مع أبي وأمي.
لا إنهن هنا بالمدينة المنورة مع أبي وأمي. If the sisters have some extra dates back there, can you please share some with us that I brought here today? Share it with us, please. أَطَالِبَاتٌ هُنَّ Are they students? لَا إِنَّهُنَّ مُدَرِّسَاتٌ بِالْمَدْرَسَةِ الثَّانَوِيَّةِ From this context, from this text here, this dialogue, the first question should be answered directly from there. أَجِبْ عَنَ الْأَسْئِلَ الْآتِيَةِ The first exercise is directly from the dialogue. You got to go back and answer those questions from here. Drop it. Just drop it there. Just drop it. جزاكَ اللَّهُ خَيْرٌ Okay, for homework, please try to start. Go back and read the dialogue a few times. Read the key, the exercises. Try to do whatever the exercises you're able to do. And next class, inshallah, we start with the exercises. Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. Subhanakallahumma wa bihamdika ashhadu an la ilaha illa anta astaghfiruka wa atubu ilayk. JazakAllahu khair.